Okay, so are you on that side of France where people are extremely opinionated and like
About what? Because you'll find opinionated people everywhere in France.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the Developer's Bakery, a podcast about open source projects, tools, and libraries for software developers. My name is Nicola Corti, and I'll be your host for the show. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on either Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or directly on the website thebakery.dev. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show. Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Developer's Bakery. Today, I'm super excited to have on stage another amazing guest. So please welcome Xavier Goucher, Mobile RAM Team Lead at Datadog.
Hey, hello everyone, and thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for being with us on the show. And as with everyone, I want to give you some time to introduce yourself, and you also need to explain us what a mobile RAM team lead does on a daily basis.
Cool. So my name is Xavier Goucher. I live in France, in Normandy, and I'm working at Datadog, and I'm the mobile RAM team lead. So basically, I'm a software engineer, an Android engineer, but I also lead technically the mobile RAM team. And mobile RAM is basically mobile real user monitoring. The idea is that when you're writing a mobile app, you want to know lots of information about what your user experience, what their journey in your application is, and if they're facing any performance or any issue, a performance issue, any crashes, anything that might make their experience worse, basically.
Awesome. So the reason why I decided to invite Xavier, can I actually call you Xav, by the way?
Yeah, are people sure.
Okay. So the reason why I invited Xav on show is because I saw you're extremely active on the Android SDK, the mobile SDK for Datadog. So I want to ask you a little bit, what is Datadog and what is actually offering to Android engineers and mobile engineers out there?
Yeah. So Datadog is an observability platform. The main idea is that you can use Datadog to monitor the status, the logs, the performance of your application across organization, across multiple services. So basically, historically, you can see if your backend is still online, if the performance are good, and so on. And what we're offering to mobile developers for a year and a half now is having this observability in the application itself. So basically, it's kind of a mix of monitoring your crashes, monitoring your user's journey, but also seeing the performance of your application. So for instance, you want to know if some network requests are lower than others, if some views in your application are doing too much stuff in the main thread and blocking the UI. And you know, basically knowing what's happening in your application once it's released and used on real users' devices.
Awesome. Like, are there anything Android specific? Like, how does this translate to the Android world? I assume like getting the log cut probably and also crashes, but are there also like some technicalities related to Android specifically?
Yeah, a lot of things are very. I mean, each platform has its own specifics, and on Android, we're trying to be very, very tight to the life cycle that we all know. So basically, we're trying to tie ourselves to the activities and fragments life cycle, meaning that basically, in mobile RAM in Datadog, we have this concept of view, and a view is basically a screen. Your user seeing something. And as always, we try to be from the user point of view. So we try to be tied to the technical, but from the user point of view. And so basically we have a way to say, okay, my activity is a screen and I navigate to different activity. This is a different screen and we can display that and record that and display that on the website. But we can also do that if your application has just one single activity and you're just replacing fragments with another one. And we can even do a combination of that. So a lot of the technical difficulties is trying to find a way to know what's the screen the user is looking at and recording the proper information from that screen.
Awesome. So you mentioned like recording information from the screen. I'm really interested in understanding how this is done internally. Like I know the SDK is open source, so people can actually look at the implementation, but maybe you can tell us like what, like a glimpse of what the complexity are of this SDK.
Exactly. So the first step, like the first thing that we try to know is the view. So what view the user is looking at, and for that we have a way to know whenever a new activity is created. So this is the first step for us to get information. And when a new activity is created, we can start listening to this activity's fragment manager to know if fragments are added to this activity. On top of that, we have a couple of things that we try to record. The first thing is if the user is interacting with the application. And the main assumption is that most of the time this is going to be using a touch screen. So what we do is whenever a new activity is created, we also start listening to touches on the window. And basically what we do is whenever the user touches the screen, we're analyzing the touch, but we're not consuming it. So we just say, oh, there was a touch. Let's just keep this in mind, but we let your activity, your views, deal with handling this touch. And so basically what we can do is we can detect when there is a tap, when there is a scroll, when there is a swipe on the screen. And what we do is we try to grab the hierarchy of view and say, okay, you tapped on this button and or you swiped through this recycle view list or you scrolled on an image or anything. And then we try to record that as an action and say, okay, this is something that the user did. And we try to grab some key information. For instance, we use the IDs that are set on the widgets. If you tap on a widget that's inside the list, we give you which item it is. Some stuff like that. So that's for actions. And then we have resources, which is basically any network request that you're going to do. And for that, we just have a simple interceptor that we add to OKHTTP. So basically, whenever you do a request, we know when it started, when it ended. We can know how long the DNS resolution took, how long the SSL handshake took, how long the download took, and how many bytes were downloaded. And we record all of that as one piece of information as well.
So other than screens and network, are there any other capabilities that you're offering for Android or for mobile in general?
Yes. So another thing that we do is grabbing errors. So we can grab errors automatically when you have a crash, of course. So when you have a crash, we detect that and we add this to basically what's happening in the view. And usually this is going to be the last event that you have in the view. But we can also grab, so it's not automatic, so you can do this manually. You can say, oh, I add a try-catch block and I want to record that I caught an exception. And I want just to know that this exception occurred because it's not supposed to happen, but you know, you made your due diligence with a try catch block. Another thing that we try to grab is related to performance. Mostly in Android, whenever you do something on the main thread, you're blocking the main thread from refreshing the screen and from detecting user touches, and so. Basically, you need to be, whenever you do work on the main thread, you need to be very, very fast, under 16 milliseconds if you want to have something that's. What we can do is detect whenever you're doing something on the main thread that lasts for longer than 100 milliseconds or longer than 700 milliseconds. And we record that as long tasks or frozen frames to say, hey, you did a long piece of work here. That's blocking the UI, and this might degrade the experience for your customers.
So This all sounds interesting, but I'm actually curious to understand if people that are interested in tracking performances are actually adding this SDK that is impacting their performances. Because I believe that, you know, like looking through the network requests and consuming all of your attach events and so on has an impact.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about it?
Exactly. I mean, this is something that we try to monitor ourselves. We are doing, this is like a balance that we have to keep. So we want to know about the performance of the application, but we want our SDK to be as lightweight as possible so that it does not impact this performance. So what we're doing is a lot of time when we need to add some new piece of code to observe something, we're trying to check whether or not it's going to degrade something. To give you a concrete example, we have a way to know what's the CPU usage, the memory usage, and the frame rate of your application, basically. And we tie that information to a view. So for instance, if one of the view, during one of the view, you're using 200 CPU ticks per second, it means that you're doing a lot of computation, which is going to, you know, slow down the application. And to know that, basically, we have to dig into the system and read some information about the process of your application. And so it's all very easy to do, but it's still some I/O that you need to do. You need to parse the file from the system. So we basically do this only once every couple of seconds, if I remember correctly. So we had to find a value to say, okay, we want the information to be often enough that if you're just passing through an activity, you're still going to have some kind of information. But also we want it to be not too often that it's going to drain your battery and use all of your CPU and memory. So this is something that's very hard to do. And what we do usually is every once in a while, we have a run of a sample app. So usually we try to use open source app to test our SDK because basically it's real complex app and not an Hello World app. And we just measure all sorts of performance information about this using the Android profiler without and with the SDK. And then we try to see, okay, what's the overload that we had.
Out of curiosity, which open source app are you using to benchmark?
Okay, if I remember correctly, we're using Wikipedia, we're using Telegram, we're using the Google I/O schedule app, and I think we're using a Reddit client. So you know, we try to find diverse application that might have, you know, different scenarios of you walking into the application, but still some that have, you know, real complex use cases. That's not just, you know, I click on a button, I download an image, and that's it.
Okay, that's really interesting. And I'm glad that you mentioned this, like this finding the balance between getting too much data and actually killing the device as being one of the most challenging points of the SDK. I actually wanted to ask you, what do you think is the hardest task of this SDK, or what is the hardest plugin or component that you have to develop for this?
I think one of the hardest plugin that we have to develop is so one of the most complex one was to be able to detect NDK crashes. So basically, usually in Android, you mostly write your application in Java or Kotlin, and it's running inside of a JVM. But you can also have native code, which is written in C or C++. If you're doing something that's, you know, computation intensive and that really need to be fast. And a lot of people are using, you know, native NDK libraries as well. So I know that a lot of local database are using NDK whenever you have some AI. This is something that needs C or C++ stuff. And so we had to be a bit more, we had to do more research to be able to grab
the OS signal that says, hey, your application is going to quit because you add a pointer reference that was null, or you're doing, you know, something that's wrong, or and so being able to retrieve this information and keep it in order to be able to send it was very difficult. Because basically what's happening is that when your application is crashing, you have very, very little time to do anything. And you should do like the most simplest thing of all, because your application is crashing. So you don't know if when you're going to call something is going to go to the end or not. Because your application is in an unknown state and an unstable state. So what we do whenever we detect a crash is we try to grab as much information as we can. So the stack trace, some information about which thread crashed and so on. And we write that down to a text file immediately. And then we let the process crash. And the next time the application opens, then we read those files and recombine the information to be able to send it.
Yeah, I can see how handling native crashes is one of the most challenging tasks. Like, I recently had to deal with one, and well, it's always like a challenge, indeed. So I wanted to ask you, so now I'm an Android engineer, I have my own app, I set up this SDK, and I end up having like a lot of information, like data collected on how my app behaves. I'm wondering if this SDK is... yeah, mostly collecting data, but what is actionable? Like, am I getting some suggestions on things that I can actively do to mitigate? Are there like pattern recognition of potential problems? Like, how do we transform data into actionable things to improve the app?
Yeah, that's actually one of the key things that we're trying to do. One of the recent improvement that we had was doing the mobile vitals. So basically, this is what I mentioned earlier, being able to track the CPU, the memory, the refresh rate, and detecting whenever you have work happening on the main thread. And what we're trying to do now is being able to indeed find patterns. So this is done like in the data that's in the cloud. We're trying to say, okay, for instance, my profile activity is using much more memory than the rest of your application. Being able to say, so one of the things that we can do is show you during the user session which screen people went on, and show you also how the memory improved. So we have this kind of graph that show you the memory over time and the CPU usage over time, which kind of gives you an idea of where the performance roadblocks were. This is a work in progress, of course, and we're trying to improve as always. But we're trying very hard to find the ways to indeed not just be, okay, I'm going to Datadog to see some data and see some graphs and so on, but to also have some ways to give you hints that, hey, you should look into this. Another thing that we have is that anything that we send, any data that we sent, can be monitored. And that's one of the great strengths of Datadog, is that anything can become an alert. So you can say, okay, I'm looking at the average CPU or the average refresh rate of all my views, and I want to get an alert on my email if, say, the refresh rate goes below 30, or if the average memory usage goes over, I don't know, 500 megabytes or something. And then basically you have this monitors that's watching your data as it comes in, and possibly one day you're going to release a new version of your app that's keeping a lot of the images in memory and not releasing them, and then you're going to see, oh, I have a memory leak, and you're going to be warned very, very fast.
I see. I'm actually wondering if there is going to be some machine learning engineer like doing some magic with all the data of all the collected apps or not.
But I'm maybe not sure at all, because that's completely outside of the scope of what I'm doing. So I know that people are working on making this, being able to know extract patterns from these. We already have some stuff that's done in the error tracking area, So basically, when you have an errors, we're trying to aggregate the errors that are similar. So you have the same crash happening in the same with the same stack trace in the same views. And we're going to be able to extract some information that says, okay, this crash is mostly happening on device with Android 12, for instance, and just Android 12. And so you know that, okay, this is where I should be looking. Or we can be extracting the fact that it only happens since version 1.5, or it's only happening in people in Europe, for instance. So yeah, that's the kind of thing we try to do.
Awesome. So back to our mobile world. I'm actually curious if, like, I'm sure you saw like potentially like a lot of bugs and errors and problems of people. What do you think is the most common pitfall or problem that apps have? And like if I were to give you my naive Android app, which area would you say, like, let's look there, because there might be, I don't know, issues, problems, performance pitfalls or whatever?
I think one of the things is having too many requests, too many network requests, because sometimes either the cache is not configured correctly, so you are downloading pictures from your user's avatar or, you know, your wall, whatever, and sometimes the cache, you're using an image loading library and you don't configure the cache correctly, and so you're downloading the same image more often than you should. And this is something that you can detect. Or it's a succession of network requests that are happening too often. So you're doing the same request over and over again, and even though the request is not that big, because it's being done like 12 times during any session, it piles up to something very, very high. And so being able to see that, oh, this is the request I'm doing most often, and maybe I could make it a bit shorter, maybe I could compress the data, or there's some data in there that I don't need at all. This is something that people can do.
I see. So now I want to ask you, like, another thing that is quite relevant for us in Europe, apparently. That is related to data collection. And I say for us in Europe because of GDPR and so on. So, I mean, this SDK is collecting data, and I'm pretty sure you can potentially identify the user in some form. So I'm wondering, how does like this Datadog SDK handles the fact they're actually collecting data inside the application that is governed by another privacy policy and other regulations. So how do you handle all this?
Well, first of all, one of the key things is that the SDK does not collect anything that the customer doesn't ask to. So basically, you need to initialize the SDK and say, oh, I do want to send this kind of events, and I do want to track the user interaction. I do want to track the user's network, and so on. So we only track information that we can. And by default, the only information that we can track automatically is technical information. So it's going to be the activity's name. It's going to be the network request. It's going to be, it's going to be touching on a widget. And that's all. We don't go into trying to know what the phone number is or what the email address of the user is or anything like that. And basically, we have two things that we can do to be mindful of PII. The first one, and it's, you know, regardless of GDPR, it's just making sure that we don't send any information that the customer don't want to send. It's that whenever we're about to write an event on disk, we send the customer the event and say, okay, you can actually edit some of the fields in there. So some of the fields are mutable, some are not. But the fields that are mutable, for instance, if in the request that we got, there is the query parameter which has the user's email address, or there is a credit card number, or there is some date of birth or anything, but you can just say, oh, I'm going to take the URL and I'm going to remove all the query parameters and just keep the URL because I don't want to send those PIIs. And the event is going to be edited, and it's going to be sent, and basically you can, you know, erase and redact some of the information that's going in automatically. And more specifically to GDPR, one of the things that we have is whenever you initialize the SDK, you have to give a tracking consent parameter. And this parameter basically, it's an enum. The tracking consent is either granted, not granted, or pending. Meaning that when you initialize the SDK, you say, okay, I know that the user allows me to track their information. And so you can say granted. Or you initialize it with, I know that the user doesn't want me to track anything, so I'm going to say not granted. And basically, we're not going to track anything. And nothing will be written on disk, and we're not going to do anything. Or you can say, okay, the application just started. I'm initializing the SDK, but I don't know yet what the user wants. So I'm going to say pending. And then later on, when the user is logged in, when the user is as, when the when you show your UI, your pop-up or whatever, say, hey, do you allow us to track the application technical activity to, you know, provide you a better service? And the user says yes, then you can say, oh, okay, I'm updating this consent to granted or to not granted. And basically we use that to know, okay, when it's in pending, basically we start tracking, we start recording information, but it's stored in a folder that's never going to reach the internet. And once it goes into granted, we say, okay, we move those files into the granted folder and then it can be uploaded. Or it says not granted, and so we delete completely this and nothing will be recorded anymore.
Interesting. So is there also some UI component for asking consent? No, okay.
Not at all, because basically, I mean, we could have, but then it would have been like our branded UI component, and we don't want to do that. Basically, because basically, I mean, there's many ways that you can ask a customer to do that. You can have something that's very explicit that says, hey, pop up in your face, and we want to track you, and do you allow? And basically, you don't want to just ask the user's consent just for Datadog. You're going to ask them for the ads. You're going to ask them for other analytics if you have them, or other tracking services. So basically, you want to have your own UI for this.
Makes sense. So actually, previously I was checking the repository and I saw that you folks have a lot of plugins for some of the most famous libraries in the Android ecosystem. That is, it's really nice to see. I'm actually, wondering if you can talk us a little bit about it and which integration you offer and so on.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, one of the first integrations we had was the NDK, because some customers are writing NDK stuff and they want to have observability in there as well. And then we tried to find which popular libraries were used. One of the integrations that we have is Timber, which is one that creates logs, basically. And one of the cool things about Timber, it's open source, of course, it's that you can actually have multiple destinations for the logs. So you can say, oh, I'm going to create a debug tree, and basically it's going to write things in Logcat. And we created a Datadog tree that says, oh, actually, you're writing to the Logcat, but also you're writing to your Datadog account as logs, and then the logs are going to be sent. So this makes it very easy for people to say, oh, I want to use Datadog logs, but I'm using Timber. You don't have to replace every log call in your application. You can just say, okay, I'm just adding one line and you already have all your logs there. Then we had a bunch of integration for most of the picture loading libraries, because this is one of the things that we observe. You know, we observe network requests, and we wanted to have more information about whenever those network or those picture loading fails. So we have Coil, we have Glide, I think we have Fresco. And basically, the idea is that some of those libraries, they don't just download the image from the internet. They can also load it, apply it to your image view, and maybe apply some transformation on them. And what we do is say, oh, when one of the transformation phase, or if the local cache fail, loading from the disk fails, and so on, we're going to grab this information. We can basically hook ourselves into the image library and extract all these errors and report them automatically as errors inside your view in RAM.
Interesting. So out of all of those libraries, which one was the most challenging to develop?
I mean, most of them were very simple to do, because basically most of them offer callbacks or listeners, so you can listen to what's happening. So those were quite easy. One of the libraries that we did too was KTX. So basically, a lot of Kotlin extensions. And this one was not difficult to do, but I think it was the most fun to do. Because basically we were able to try to make some of the coding experience more fun for Kotlin users. Because the main library, the core library, we make sure that it's usable as is, both from Java or Kotlin application. But then for Kotlin users, we want to have a bit more than that. And yeah, I guess no, there is one that is a bit more tricky. But it's one that we're actually currently working on. It's the integration for Jetpack Compose. Historically we've been using like the standard way of doing UIs, so XMLs, activity structures, and so on. But with Jetpack Compose being now officially released and so on, more and more people are going to be using Jetpack Compose to write UIs, and we want to be able to track those as well. And this is a bit more tricky, because you don't write the UI the same way, you don't track user interactions the same way. So we're basically, and because, you know, it's a new paradigm, it's a new library, there are lots of, you know, pitfalls to try to avoid in there.
Awesome. So now I want to switch a little bit more and focus on the open source community. Mm. And I'm actually curious, what's Datadog's take on this, like the company? And the reason why I'm asking this is because I saw a lot of projects open source and companies supporting it in different form. I'm curious to understand if people can contribute to this SDK. If yes, to which extent? So to give you an example, if someone tomorrow has their own library and they want to create a plugin, can they? Yes, no? How does this library stands in the open source ecosystem?
So I mean, the initial Datadog stand on open sourcing is that any piece of code that we write that will be run either on our customers' backend or in their users' devices needs to be open sourced, because basically you need to know what you're running, you need to know what piece of code you're going to be using. And so this means that we want to make sure that we're accountable for anything that we do. So we don't want to just say, okay, trust us, use this piece of code and it's going to work. We want to make sure that our customers can actually look into this and understand why we're doing things and how we're doing things and how we're monitoring the performances of their application. And we're definitely totally open to any contribution in the SDK. We have like this quite complete contributing doc on the repository. But basically, if you have a library that's an Android library that's downloading stuff or doing anything, and you want to make an integration with Datadog, this is completely open, and we totally welcome that. If you're having some special use case that you want to be able to track with Datadog that's not already covered, this is something that's totally open. We welcome that. And of course, we welcome any issues, any remark on the library.
Awesome. So you briefly mentioned on trust, and I actually want to follow up on that. I'm curious how you handle the problem of reproducible builds, specifically What ensures me, a developer, that the source code that I see on GitHub is the same source code that I will end up running in the jar that I download once I add the dependency on your SDK?
So one of the things is that everything is built from source. We don't build anything on any local workstation. So basically what we do is we have a job that's building the SDK, and actually this is done with GitLab, and the GitLab configuration file is inside the repository. So basically you know what you get. and basically what we're doing is whenever there is a tag on the repository, we're building a new version of the SDK and publishing it on Maven. So this is like, we're taking exactly the tag as it is and building it and publishing on Maven. So we really have like a one-to-one correspondence between the Git tag and the Maven version.
Awesome. I'm sure also people can use the GPG signature if they're so so concerned about the artifact that they end up using. So I actually wanted to ask you also a bit more on the future. So what's coming up next? You mentioned Jetpack Compose, and that actually sounds really interesting.
Yeah, this is one of the main things that we're trying to do. So in parallel, we're doing this on Jetpack Compose, and we're doing the same thing on SwiftUI for iOS, the iOS SDK, because basically those are the new ways to write application. Basically this is one of the main thing that we're working on right now. Another thing that we're working on is being able to have hybrid apps handled correctly in Datadog. So we have a browser SDK that allows you to monitor what's happening in the website. And likewise, we have the Android and iOS SDK. And what we're trying to do is say, what if my Android app displays a web view? Then you're going to have, what's happening right now today is that you're going to have information that's coming from the Android app, and you're going to have those in one side of your account in Datadog, or you're going to have something tracked inside the web view and sent in another side of the of your account. And what we want to do is be able to merge them and have them synchronized. So basically you can see the user session that says, oh, I started in the logging screen in my Android app, and then I went to my profile, and then I went to the billing page. And for the billing page, you're using a web view because your billing is made through any billing API that's in a website. And then you can say, oh, now I am on the billing page website, and you can see all the information that's specific to the website. So like I mentioned, we track a lot of performance information in the mobile. We also track a lot of performance information on the web, but not the same ones. So this is a way to unify this and have this complete view that's going across devices.
Awesome. So I'm actually wondering, like, if, for example, for the Jetpack Compose, is it something that is developed in the open and people can potentially contribute, or is this something that we will see released at a certain point publicly, and then people can jump in afterwards?
Everything is completely opened. I mean, you can see that a couple of PRs have already been merged already. So if you look at the main branch on the repository, you can see that we already have the Jetpack Compose artifact that's going to be published eventually. Anything that we do, basically, we're always working on the open source repository. We don't have a hidden private repository. So for people that want to know what we're working on, you can just, you know, monitor the commits, monitor the pull request, and you can see everything that we have in plan for the future.
That's the best way to be updated on what's going on.
Exactly.
So I actually wanted to ask you if you have further materials like talks or blog posts or other podcasts that you think people would benefit. Just if they want to know about the tool, but even if they want to understand a little bit more about the internals.
Yeah, definitely. So about the tool itself, I actually, that's how we met with Nicola, but I was in DroidCon London a few weeks ago, giving a talk about benchmarking your application. And part of it was about what we offer in Datadog. So if you want to learn more about that and more about, you know, application performance in general, this talk, the video is going to be up on DroidCon's website eventually, maybe already, but at the time of recording, it's not there yet. And we are having, we have a lot of documentation on our website and on GitHub, and we're trying to post a few blog posts about specific things. We have recently released a blog post about the mobile vitals, so being able to track the CPU, the memory, the main thread interaction. So we have this blog post that's available. And yeah, that's mostly it. And then, yeah, you can, of course, monitor what we're doing on the public repository on GitHub, of course.
Awesome. And so where people can find you online if they want to reach out to you?
So online, you can reach out to me either on GitHub, of course, or on Twitter. And it's both with the same handle. It's, at xgouchet. XGOUCHET, and you'll find the links in the show notes, of course.
Awesome. And with that, I want to thank you very much for being with us on the show today.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
And I also want to thank everyone for listening, and I'll see you all in the next episode.